This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. As we age, our brain function can decline. Numerous studies have been devoted to finding out ways to either slow or halt this process. Now, though, scientists have discovered a major factor behind this decline. It turns out it's largely influenced by our genes. That's not all. Genes also cause some of us to be vulnerable to depression and have other conditions. And this research is happening right here in San Antonio at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. And John Blangero is a leading scientist there, a researcher there. And John Blangero, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
So, John, what is this? This is a new, I know you've written over 500 scientific papers, this new one being published right now in a leading journal. What is it? Tell me more about this discovery.
So, basically, it's about a study that we're doing here in San Antonio in very large families of Mexican Americans where we're studying brain structure and brain function assessed through imaging studies and also through studies of neurocognitive function. And what we're finding is that as we look at these large families that have a wide age range, we're absolutely determining that some of the kind of normal decline in the brain's abilities that we see with aging is due to underlying genetic variation. In fact, maybe as much as half of all the variation that we see in the decline of brain function is due to genes.
And so some of this decline in brain function, and it may be, you know, like me, a guy who's 50, who it's harder for me to learn new vocabulary words.
Well, we all will suffer some effects of aging, and the brain is certainly susceptible to that. But it's the way to think about this potential for genetic interactions with aging is that some people will decline faster, drop further than others, and this tends to run in families.
And you said you're doing this. You have certain families in San Antonio, Mexican American family. Why Mexican American families that you're studying here in San Antonio?
So we've been studying a large Mexican American families here in San Antonio from about 1991, and one of the great reasons for doing it is because they tend to be very stable families. They stay in San Antonio. They're quite large. The number of offspring that you see in some of these nuclear families is very large. And they're also remarkably giving and have been fantastic subjects over the year, coming back every 4 to 5 years now for over 20 years. So it's been a remarkable human genetic resource.
It started out as the San Antonio Family Heart Study.
That's right. And over the years, we've expanded into many more diseases, and including diabetes and osteoporosis, and now very much focused on diseases around the brain. So things like major depression, normal cognitive decline, and also just the biology of the brain structure and how the brain functions.
Our phone lines are open if you want to give us a call and join the conversation as we talk about genetics and brain function and some of the research that's happening in San Antonio. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. We're talking with John Blangero. He's a leading researcher, scientist at Texas Biomedical Research Institute. So you are doing a cutting-edge deep sequencing. What is deep sequencing?
So everybody's heard about the Human Genome Project that was completed in recent years. The human genome consists of about 3.2 roughly billion base pairs of information. So in our study here in San Antonio, the ultimate genetic information is complete sequence information on each individual who takes part in our study. So basically, we know the totality of their genetic variation, and we attempt to correlate variations in the DNA with how things like brains function tracks. And we can do this in this very large families using statistical approaches. So it's complete information basically about the human genome on these individuals, which is something that I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would happen during my career.
Having a lot of computers helps with this.
It certainly does. And we're very fortunate at Texas Biomed to have a large parallel computing cluster that we call Medusa. And currently we're at about 8,000 processors that are used every minute of every day, 365 days a year. And it helps us to search through this massive haystack for the needles.
Is that the AT&T Mega Computer Farm?
That's the AT&T Genomics Computing Center at Texas Biomed.
So I'm going to go back to what you talked about, because I'm going to make sure I understand it completely. So you're doing individual sequencing, complete genetic sequencing of individuals. It's like taking a swab and inside of their cheek, and that gives you everything you need right there, right? And you run it through the machine, and you break it down into all the little letters you find out. And then you do this for all the families, because you have a basis of comparison in the families. And then you're able to also follow the family trees and as people. And then you look at the actual health events that happen to folks. When did this individual have a heart attack? How did their cholesterol go up? When did it go up? And you start picking through the data that you have of all the comparisons and saying, well, this person's genetic information leans this way, and this person does that, and this maybe there's a clue into where the genes are influencing this person's actual health outcomes.
Yeah, that's quite accurate description of the process. It ends up involving a lot of statistical inference as we build evidence up. There's a lot of mathematics involved along the way, but basically it's seeing if those changes in DNA track through the families in the same way that the risk of disease does.
All right, we're going to get a caller on the air, and you want to join the conversation. The number is 614-8980. Let's get Kelly in the conversation. Kelly, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thank you. I'm a college senior at UTSA, so I know just enough biology to be dangerous. And my question is, does your research address epigenetics at all? Because it's my understanding that can really influence, sometimes even more so than the exact genetic code.
Sure.
Okay, what is that?
So epigenetics is the basically how other non-genetic factors alter the expression of genes.
Like, and if I was a smoker.
Yeah. Smoking has epigenetic effects. That's correct. So the way it does it is by, it's very specifically, it alters the chemistry of the DNA. It's largely through modifications of methylation that turn on or turn off various aspects of the gene.
Okay, we're going to dig deeper into that. We're going to get into Kelly's answer. Thank you for that call, Kelly. And if you want to call in, if you've got a question like that, please do. The number is 614-8980. We do have to take this break. And you're listening to The Source on KSTX. We've got John Blangero from the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. We're talking about some of the fascinating scientific research happening right here in San Antonio. The rest of the world is paying attention, so we should too. And this is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In the studio, I've got rock star scientist John Blangero here talking about research happening here in San Antonio about genetics and how it's influencing people's brain health and your overall health. He's with the Texas Biomedical Research Institute. We had a call before the break from Kelly asking about epigenetics. Is that the word?
Epigenetic.
Influences.
Modifications of genes, yeah.
Right. So if you smoke or if you got hit by some sort of gamma rays, maybe you would have an influence on your...
And many other environmental factors to still be determined. So yes, the environment can interact with the genes and silence genes or turn them on. And it does play a role in every disease that you can think of. And Kelly's question was excellent. We certainly do study epigenetic factors in all of our studies as part of our intense study of the human genome.
So aside from, smoking, what else can, does any human behavior do that? If like, say, if you were a runner, does that influence how your genes are going to behave?
Certainly exercise has been shown to be able to alter gene expression sometimes through this epigenetic pathway. But practically, even social stress likely can influence how genes act and how genes respond to the environment.
So you use is statistical genetics. That is so, and you're like considered one of the greats in. So, what is statistical genetics?
So, you know, we're banding around these numbers like there's the 3 billion possible sites in the genome where humans can vary, and we typically have to study a thousand to several thousand individuals in these families. And we might study, when we do an imaging study of the brain, we might have 300,000 measures of each individual brain. You see these numbers build up. And the only way to get through all of this information is to process it statistically and try to separate the wheat from the chaff using statistical models that do some of the primary thinking for us. And then at the end of the day, we deliver a prioritized set of hypotheses that maybe then we can go back into the wet labs and do experimental science on.
Wet labs, what does that mean?
So the wet labs are the traditional, you know, the concept of the laboratory where there's chemicals and assays, and that's where your blood work is being done and things like that.
Mice in there. Yeah. It'll give them a little shot of something and see what happens to them.
Sometimes animal research is involved in that aspect, sometimes not.
Now, President Obama has called for a Manhattan Project for brain mapping, trying and getting down to genetic influences on the brain. There's a lot of people talking about we're entering into the decade of the brain. What does that mean?
Well, the brain is probably, arguably, the most important human organ, and it's enormously complex. We're only still in our infancy of understanding how it works and how things like memory work. And so we have plenty of basic biological research that needs to be done so we can better understand how humans think and what it means and how it affects their lifestyle. So I think it's very encouraging that now we have the tools that we're able to turn to such an enormously complex and important organ such as the brain. So it's going to be an exciting time, especially when we combine it with all the rapid progress in genomics.
Now, we can't talk about the brain and aging without getting into Alzheimer's. Are there genetic markers that have been identified, or where are we on that?
Yeah, so Alzheimer's is an interesting disease, generally occurs later in life, and there are certainly genes that have been unequivocally implicated in risk of Alzheimer's. There are different forms of Alzheimer's. Some of them are relatively simple genetic, and some of them are more your common form of Alzheimer's is definitely influenced by multiple genes and multiple environmental factors. But Alzheimer's is kind of an extreme case of cognitive decline with age.
Now, we keep talking about genes, and this gene does that, and this gene may do this. But it still comes down to the question of gene activity, when they come on and for how long they will come on and produce a certain protein, and especially when you compare the overall genetics to us and chimpanzees, you know, they're very similar, but our genes are acting very differently.
Yeah, so genes, although the sequence doesn't change, their activity absolutely changes. And most of those changes, this kind of context dependent, where a gene might only turn on at a certain period of development or during the life cycle, those tend to be the product of other genes. So it's other genes are integrating in with whole other sets of genes in determining when things turn off and turn on, along with the environment, aspects of the environment. So, yes, it's very important for genes to sometimes only be expressed in certain tissues. For example, there are genes that only work in the heart, and they're turned off everywhere else. There are genes during brain development that are only turned on at certain parts of fetal development and are essentially not seen in any appreciable levels at any other time. So.
And do we know? I mean, how do our genes know when to turn on and turn off? What's the signal?
Basically, that signal is also genetic. It's a very intricate web of gene interaction, so that the basic building plan of biological life is largely written in the genes, although there's clearly a lot of variation, but it's basically other genes are keeping, our clocks are keeping track of when things should be on and off.
Okay, the number to call to join the conversation, if you got a question for John Blangero, 614-8980, and let's get John in the conversation. John, welcome to The Source. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hey.
My question is, chemical dependency, like as you get older, you find that more and more people are dependent upon so many different pharmaceutical drugs just to exist. Heart conditions, you know, lung conditions, whatever, different types of diseases, and a multitude of the medication they're taking for an extended period of time. What effect does that have on the genes?
Okay, John, thank you for that question.
That's a fantastic question. In fact, the way that most drugs work is by altering gene expression. Most drug targets these days are actually come in the form of genes. So we decide that a gene is involved in the pathway of the disease. We look to see whether or not it is accessible to chemical intervention, and drugs are developed that way. So basically, drugs work primarily through altering how genes express themselves.
And so can we take that even further and become even more precise pharmaceutical cocktail to have more genetic, more prescribed genetic reaction?
Well, certainly, probably one of the major approaches to modern drug discovery is through this kind of genetic information that we're generating in these kinds of projects, when we unequivocally can find, when we find a specific gene that is involved in one of these clearly disease-related measurements that we are making. That gives us a quick entrance into the biological pathway. So genetic discovery of drug targets is pretty much the norm these days.
So a lot of people would be surprised to find out that this cutting-edge research is happening right here in San Antonio, but it turns out that San Antonio has a certain kind of advantage that there's a reason why this groundbreaking study is happening here, that we have a unique combination of resources, right?
Absolutely. Obviously, one of the great things that I've been able to work with during my career here, and now it's approaching 30 years, is the access to an incredible population here in San Antonio that's given us access to very large families, which is really what we need for this sort of work.
But also hear about the combination with the work with the University of Texas Health Science Center in San Antonio, and also with the biomedical and other biomedical work going on here.
We work very closely with the medical school, especially in our studies of brain, the Research Imaging Institute that's run by Peter Fox here at the medical school. That's where all of our assessments are made, and we have a great relationship, very close with our local medical school.
You know, but you mentioned about the San Antonio Family Heart Study, and it's 1,400 Mexican-Americans from 40 different San Antonio families, making it one of the largest family-based human studies known, and this has been going on for 20 years. So, and what are some of the outcomes? What have we gotten from that?
Sure. We're actually up to about 3,000 individuals in about 80 families now. So it's even larger. And we have found novel genes influencing risk of heart disease that are now drug targets and being examined very closely. We might have more than 100 gene discoveries in relation to the San Antonio Family Heart Study. So all of these genes spin off a cottage industry of research to really find out very deeply what they may do. So it's been an amazingly productive project overall.
Yeah, but in the past, there was a lot of criticism about how scientific research was focused on white males, and there was question about sometimes how transposable that information was to other ethnic groups. But it's interesting that this was a huge study, long-range study, a deep study done with Mexican-American families, and of course we're seeing this massive demographic shift. So this is a lot of valuable information that's going to be, you know, very, very needed.
And it's also let us focus on diseases of particular importance to the Hispanic community. As you know, we've done a lot of work on diabetes, which is an absolute scourge of San Antonio, with, you know, prevalences approaching 30% of the population on the Mexican American population. So it's been extremely useful all around.
So should everyone get their own genetic sequence?
I'd say not yet. Okay. And you have to be very careful. Genetics can be oversold, and we're not at the point where we can look at your sequence and tell you what your probability is of getting practically any disease except some of the very most simple genetic diseases. So it still has to be taken with some skepticism, and you're hearing that from a geneticist, but its day will eventually come where it'll be returning a lot of individual value, but it's not yet.
And so we talked about the coming decade of the brain. What are you looking forward to? What is, are you excited to hear?
Well, even the measurement systems that we're using on the brain are always changing. So people are always developing new types of measurement that better get at some of the more direct brain functions than what we have now. We have to measure these still relatively indirectly through imaging. But there's lots of developments on the imaging side.
All right, John Blangero, he's a scientist at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute, author of more than 500 scientific papers, and most recently one about how the brain ages and how it's largely influenced by our genes. Thanks for joining us on The Source this afternoon.
Thank you.
When we come back from this news break, we're going to be talking about more scientific innovation in San Antonio and how the efforts being made to get that into the marketplace. This is The Source on KSTX.